It is the first Wednesday of the month, and it has been for a long time, are a great pleasure to set aside some time on Focus 580 to talk about food. And we've been doing this for a long, long time, generally with this man we like to call our chef in residence. It's purely an honorary title, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Doyle Moore. And when we do these programs, we set a topic. And when I say we, I mean he sets a topic. And sometimes it's been a particular a kind of dish. Sometimes we've talked about regional styles of cooking in the United States. We've talked about different kinds of cooking from different places around the world. And then we kind of kick the topic around. People call in, sometimes ask questions, sometimes call with recipes. Occasionally people have called in with problems saying something like, I'm trying to make this recipe, and it's just not working for me. What do you think I am doing wrong? So we have done a little troubleshooting like that. And we always have fun. It's really a lot of fun to talk to the people who call in about their food experiences throughout their life. Well, sometimes now on the program, in the course of one show, some subject that comes up, and that ends up being what we talk about the next time around. And so in that way, we this morning are going to talk about cooking and diabetes. And we have the man here, as I said, Doyle Moore, but also we do have a special guest to help us out, Carol Shriver. She is a registered dietitian and licensed dietitian and nutritionist, and she works at the Carle Foundation Hospital. She's practiced as a registered dietitian since 1992 and works with a lot of different kinds of people on different areas, including weight management, cardiovascular disease, and diabetes. So she is here and can give us the benefit of her expertise. And we're open to whatever questions people have about the subject. And maybe, again, as always, if you have a recipe you'd like to share, that's great. If you have a particular question, that's great too. I know between the two of them, they will do their best to give you an answer. And all you have to do is call us. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much.
Yes.
Both
thank
of you.
You. Good
for
to be
being here.
Here.
So, and now how did we, now Doyle says to me, of course, I can't tell you what I did last week. So I don't remember last month. He says to me that on last month's show.
Yes, the next to the last caller. Came up. Said, why don't you talk about cooking for diabetics?
Okay.
Because as you know, that has been my plight for several years now. And I've been paying attention to that. And that came out in the conversation. And she said, why don't you talk about that?
Okay.
So we are.
All right.
And if you recall, way back in the dim days,
yeah,
the lady from Danville, her husband was diabetic.
Oh yes,
and I do know that there are many people who are listening and talking about that, and we never really addressed that too much except some time ago.
Mm. Well, let me ask Carol because I know that there are a lot of misconceptions about diabetes and diet. People have ideas that I think that aren't quite true. So let us say if you were sitting down with somebody who was had for the first time been diagnosed and the doctor said, well, you have diabetes. What are the first most basic things that you would try to tell that person about how it is maybe they might need to change the way they think about food?
A lot of people think that people with diabetes can't have sugar is basically what they say. I can't eat sugar anymore or candy and that sort, you know, those sorts of foods. But it's really about the carbohydrate. It's about portion control and carbohydrate, basically, and eating well-balanced meals. People with diabetes can eat the same things as the rest of us. They just need to watch the portion sizes of certain types of foods.
Yeah. We just, in preparing for the show, I know that we went through some of the books that we have accumulated, and we have a lot of them, and a lot of them are cookbooks. Mm-hmm. And I just now, I didn't bring them into the studio with me, but just now sitting on my desk, I have four cookbooks that are specifically cooking for people who have diabetes. And just looking through them, it pretty much looks to me like you, again, given the kind of constraint that you talked about, you should be able to eat almost anything that you would want and any kind of food so that there's nothing that says that now that you have diabetes that you are going to face severe restrictions that eating is not going to be any fun anymore. You're not going to be able to enjoy it, and that it's just going to be sort of a burden. And it looks like, in fact, that's not true at all. And then, in fact, there's some overlap between healthy eating for people with diabetes and what we say about what constitutes healthy eating for anybody.
That's right. You know,
particularly people who are concerned about their heart health.
Heart health. They need to you need to watch your fat. Fat needs to be at 30% or less per day, and saturated fat needs to be low also. Saturated fat is found in meat and dairy products mainly. There are some other products that contain it, but that's the main source of saturated fat. Mm-hmm. Saturated fat is solid at room temperature, and it causes more problems in the arteries and that sort of thing.
Yeah. So we could be talking about butter.
Sure.
We could be talking about some cheeses.
Correct.
Maybe.
Correct. Whole milk.
Okay. So so things like that. But then again, because we're all being advised that we should try to limit our fat intake, that may not be all that different than what you would recommend for
exactly
anybody,
exactly.
Particularly people who are trying to lower their risk of, of heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how would you say that you have changed because you have diabetes yourself, how you have changed the way you eat and you think about cooking?
Well, I was sort of smiling at what you said. What's the first thing you think is, oh, I can't have this anymore. Yeah. So I had to go through that period myself of, oh, I can't have this. Throw this away. Get rid of this. Do all that. And then slowly I come to find out, well, wait, it's not those things. It's those things that are the trouble. And and as Carol said, it was the carbohydrates, you know. And then so then it was a matter of, I can find some sugar-free candy. Yes. And, oh, there's some sugar-free ice cream. Yes. And now don't have that piece of white bread. Oh, what'll I do? So, of course, you know I've loved to talk about the whole wheat, the white whole wheat that you get from Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm cooking almost entirely with white whole wheat, which we can buy in this town, by the way, because whole wheat is not good for you, better for you than the refined white. So cut down. And I have been eating less and less and less. And then whenever I go to someone's house, I eat whatever they're going to serve without worrying about whether I can have this or that. Some of my friends will make things with a sugar substitute, but not everybody. And so you eat it, but you don't eat all of it. And I found that I can do that. So that modification is the biggest one, was slow down on what you're eating.
Mm-hmm. This is one of the things an understanding that I have come to that probably I wouldn't have had before. Again, it has to do with the significance of carbohydrates. Mm-hmm. And I know that there are some people who have suggested for diabetes, people with diabetes, very severe restriction of carbohydrates to the point where they would say something like, you can't eat bread, you can't eat pasta, you can't eat rice. It's in all these, the kind of starches that we think of so much being a regular, you know, potatoes being a regular component of a lot of foods. And having heard that, I thought, well, what's left?
What
if my doctor told me, he said twigs and berries. That's all that's left if you're restricting all these things. And that does make me laugh, but that was it. If you've cut out all this and you've cut out all this and cut out all this, what are you left with? He said twigs and berries.
But it sounds like that's sort of an extreme that you don't, in fact,
well,
don't
it,
really,
it is.
You know,
so
down into twigs and berries.
The point is you don't have to cut out all of that.
Yeah.
You just need to make better choices.
Okay.
That's what it is.
Good.
With your pastas, I usually recommend whole wheat. And you can find good whole wheat pastas out there now that don't take forever to cook. Fiber slows down the rate at which the blood sugar rises. So we recommend higher fiber diet for those people. Whole wheat breads, as Doyle said. Try to find a bread that has 3 grams of fiber or more per slice, and you do need to look at the food labels because sometimes it's the serving size is one slice. Sometimes it's two slices, especially for bread. Whole wheat pasta can be found just about anywhere now. And it's very good. You can't tell that it's, you know, any different than the refined pasta. And that's the problem. I mean, when we went to all the low-fat products probably about 10 years ago, probably, a lot of people thought, oh, good, this is low-fat, so I can eat it. And they, you know, they were eating things like the low-fat cookies and those sorts of things. And they were having problems with blood sugars because they use a lot of refined, you know, refined sugars and things like that and refined flour. And it wreaked havoc on a lot of people's blood sugar. So I too was on that bandwagon for a while, and I had terrible problems with my blood sugar. So I had to go back to eating the whole grains and cutting those things out. You can have those things, just not every day and all day long.
So what about rice and potatoes?
Try to get the brown rice. Brown rice is got more fiber than the white rice. Potatoes, I tell people just to watch your potatoes. I don't think potatoes are – I don't think there are good and bad foods. I think there are good and bad habits. Mm-hmm. If you get in the habit of eating certain things all the time, then that's an issue. So potatoes are fine. Sweet potatoes have more fiber than regular potatoes, white potatoes. So just eat a wide variety of different things, and you should be fine.
Okay. We have a caller. We'd like to welcome others into the conversation here this morning. It's our regular monthly program on cooking, something that we do, have been doing for a long time, once a month, always on the first Wednesday at 10. And our guest is Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence. And as a result of a suggestion request from last time around, we're talking this morning about cooking for diabetics or people with diabetes. And as a special guest, Doyle arranged for us to have here with us in the studio, Carol Shriver. She's a dietitian and nutritionist at Carle Foundation Hospital, and one diabetes and is one of the particular things that she is interested in. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone here over in Indiana on our toll-free line, line four. Hello.
Hello. I'd like for two questions. The first one deals with sugars. In some of the literature I've read, they talk about stay away from refined sugar. Well, I looked at some of the things I eat, and they're basically refined sugars, especially in drinks. And so I just kept my portions down. That didn't present any problem in terms of keeping track of my carbohydrates. But somebody mentioned that, and I'm going to find out if this is true or not. Someone said that refined sugars are absorbed very quickly, therefore it will mess around with your blood sugar fast, and complex sugars won't. It takes more time for the body to break them down. I've never found anywhere, you know, I've been on the net and everything, I never found anywhere where that's, anybody actually says that's true, that has any kind of credentials at all. So I'd like to know the answer to that. And secondly, one for the chef in residence.
Mm-hmm.
Not concerned about whether it turns out to be an eighth of an ounce or even larger, but a very nice recipe for strawberry shortcake.
Got it.
Okie dokie.
All right. Well, thanks for the call. Okay, well, I'm really glad that the caller asked this question about sugar, because I think people are really confused about this. And they have this idea that we put down here on the table in front of us, we'll put a piece of candy. We'll go over to Fannie Mae and get some Trinidads. Mm. And we'll have a Trinidad here. Okay. You like those?
I do.
I do too. Okay. We have a Trinidad. And then right next to it, we'll put an apple. Now, both these things have sugar in them, but I guess we get this idea that the apple is better somehow. It's something about that Trinidad, man, it's really good, but the sugar in it, well, it's different. And somehow we think about those two things as being completely different, when in fact, I'm not sure, you know, other people would come along and say, well, look, sugar is sugar. And you get it either way, so maybe Well, I don't know. How much difference is there between the apple and the Trinidad?
Well, with the apple, you get soluble and insoluble fiber, again, which slows down the rate at which the blood sugar rises. You also get vitamins and minerals. Now, does that mean you can't have a Trinidad every so often? No. It's just your choice, whatever you want to choose. Carb is carb, but certain things will keep you fuller longer and you'll get more out of it. And that's basically how I look at it. Yes, I do eat Trinidads and I enjoy them, but I also eat apples and I try to eat more apples and Trinidads.
Right. Okay. Well, is how about the sugar? The sugar that's in the apple and the sugar that's in the piece of candy. Does your body react differently to them?
In the Trinidad, you would have the sucrose and the simple sugars. Again, like the caller said, simple sugars are absorbed more rapidly than complex. And the apple would have the complex because of the fiber and insoluble and soluble fiber.
So it is true with the caller was sort of suggesting that somehow if the piece of candy that sugar, your body takes it
in quickly,
in faster than the sugar that's in the apple.
Because your body doesn't have to do much to change it. It's already in the form that your body uses, or close to the form that your body uses. So It does raise your blood sugar faster.
Okay. You want to talk about strawberry shortcake?
Yes, that too. I'd cut the Trinidad in half and have two of them.
Have two.
Yes, this is rather quick. I've been making strawberry shortcake recently, but you can do it two ways. You can find a recipe. I don't have it in my mind for a whole wheat biscuit that your grandmother used. No, she never made whole wheat biscuits.
It
was always white flour.
White flour and lard.
And it's very hard to do it, but you can make a biscuit with whole wheat flour. And so what I do is I love Jiffy mix. Now Jiffy is refined flour, but you don't use too much of it. But it's got already the stuff in it, the baking soda and everything in it. So I would use 3/4 of a cup of Jiffy or Bisquick, and then I would use the remainder of 2 cups of whole wheat flour and put those two together, and then probably two little sachets of Splenda. And then, depending on whether you like it sweet or not, then either no fat milk or buttermilk, and mix up a biscuit. This is not a cake; it's a biscuit. This is the way my mother did it. And you pat out 2 rounds of this biscuit dough, about 8-10 inches, and put one on top of the other. Pop them in the oven and cook them very high heat for about 12 to 15 minutes. Then the strawberries are put inside the you lift up the top, fill that, put some more on it, and then cut it in wedges. And then always serve it with the rest of your low-fat milk. And it's awfully good. Now, for the strawberries, well, you've still got that Splenda. You just sprinkle some Splenda on top of it. And some bourbon. Bourbon makes anything good, and you aren't using more than about a tablespoon of bourbon to douse that. You can do your choice of rum, or cognac was the last one I had, and it's called. Why is this so good? There's nothing in it that's going to really be harmful, and I'm not eating a huge hunk of it, because I do know that there is refined flour in it. But I like making that very much, and I like making it for friends. And I've found that I can mix that up, start making it, and have it baking while we're eating something, and you have it hot.
Hmm. So basically what you're doing is you're substituting some whole wheat flour for the white.
Yes.
And you're using artificial sweetener instead of sugar.
Right.
And basically, that's the only modification.
That's the only modification.
And also a small – you're talking also a small portion.
Well, yes. That's what you finally do learn, is that keep it smaller, and you'll feel better about yourself, and you won't be stuffed, and all the things that are complicated aren't as complicated. And you feel good about it. Mainly, you'll feel good about it. And that's another thing, is that I feel good about what I just did.
Okay. Is there anything, Carol, you would add to that or anything you...
I think that sounds great. That's what I would tend to do also. I like the biscuits for my strawberry shortcake also. You could also use angel food cake
Is sugar-free angel food cake on the market, yes.
Huh, okay.
Pound cake also, if you wanted to find a sugar-free or a sugar-free pound cake, that would work also.
Okay. And we again, one of these things that I imagine people think about diabetes and that maybe is not exactly correct, and that is that you could never have any alcoholic beverage.
Yes.
Again, in moderation, that's okay.
They usually recommend or say that you can have up to a drink a day. And people ask me, can I save that all up for one time? And no. One drink
can't have
a day.
Seven on Friday
That's
night.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, you can't make up for it that way. But they do say that a drink a day has been, you know, shown to not cause harm.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you know, we have a couple of callers here. I'll tell you what, there's one thing that we need to do real quick first, however, because it is the first Wednesday of the month, and we need to do a little test here of our emergency alert system. So hang on here. This is only a test.
Message was instituted by the Illinois Emergency Management Agency. This station is participating in a required monthly test of the Illinois Emergency Alert System. This system was developed to provide information to the public during emergencies. This was a test.
And this is AM 580, WILL, Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. First Wednesday of the month, we're talking about cooking this morning and with our guest Doyle Moore, the man we like to call our chef in residence, and as a special guest, Carol Shriver. She's a dietitian and nutritionist at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. We're talking about cooking for people with diabetes. And if you have questions, comments, recipes, whatever, give us a call. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with someone next in Chicago. Line 4. Hello.
Hello. Well, yes. In my family, we have a history of type 2 diabetes, the classic type where it develops after the age of 60. And what we chose as an extended family was that we would not do a special diet. Instead, we would change everyone's diet. And I think over the long run, that has made the diabetes a blessing for everyone because everyone's diet improved. And it also made it easier, I think, for the person who was diabetic, or the case is plural now, the persons who are diabetic, that they're not seemingly eating differently from everyone else. And the main change, of course, was to switch to whole grains and to increase legumes in the diet. Usually we have beans or peas at almost every meal. And the one thing that has happened, though, is that there's really a conflict that has arisen about artificial sweeteners. Because in my family, we just decided, we went the route of the sugar-free yogurt, and it was just not satisfying to people who love ice cream. And so we chose, rather than to have sugar-free yogurt frequently, to have the real McCoy, the high-fat, high-sugar ice cream once a week, and only one serving, the half-cup serving. And that has worked, and everyone's satisfied, and it's not been a problem. But I noticed among the family members that use artificial sugar, they have much more of a desire for sweets than the ones who use sugar but use it in very small amounts. Like most of the time, especially for the members who are diabetic, we limit the amount of sugar in any food serving to less than 4 grams of sugar, and that makes it acceptable. And under those rules, you can even have a teaspoon of jam or jelly because that's usually a little less. But the people who use artificial sweeteners have much more of a desire for sweets than the other people. And when we have a huge family party and there's a cake served, The ones who are using artificial sugar always want frosting on the cake, whereas those who don't use artificial sugars are really satisfied if it just has a sprinkling of confectioner sugar or nothing at all. And so I'm wondering if any of your research has said anything about people who use artificial sugars, if they develop a taste for sweets more than those who use regular sugar, cane sugar, but use it in moderation.
That's an interesting question. I haven't seen any research, but I do know that your sugar substitutes are actually sweeter than table sugar,
mm-hmm.
Usually 2 to 3 times sweeter. And I do know that people that I've been that I've dealt with in the past do tend to get used to that sweet sensation, and they do tend to like sugary things more.
Yeah, and it really becomes a struggle because the other members of the family are quite satisfied with something less sweet, and the ones who are using the diet pop and the artificial sugars are always saying, oh, no, you need to have this, and why didn't you put cream cheese frosting?
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder if they need to research that, because I've seen so often that they encourage diabetics, oh, you know, just switch to artificial sweetener. And I don't know if that's really a help. I just really feel that most of the members are satisfied if they can have sugar, but like Doyle said, you know, cut the Trinidad in two and consider it two pieces.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'll have to look and see if I can find any research that specifically focuses in on that. I'll have to look for that. But it is an interesting question, and I have seen in my practice that people do tend to like the sweeter things when they do use the sugar substitutes. Though the sugar substitutes are an easy way to cut back on carbs and let people feel like they don't have to do without.
Yeah.
A lot of people do use, I like to drink, I've got a Diet Pepsi sitting right here. I like to drink diet because I'd rather eat my calories than drink them. So I do choose the sugar subs more of the time than not. But like I said, I like to eat my calories and not drink them.
But, you know, I just one last point. I think that's exactly it. You choose, and I think that's what really has to get across to all diabetics, is that you're making choices in your diet. And if you really look at what you're choosing, I mean, if you're a person who all day you're eating complex carbohydrates, eating whole grains, then if someone offers you a biscuit that's made of white flour at a meal at the end of the day, you can probably have that biscuit or half of it because you've chosen during the rest of the day to really watch your diet. And so it's not like you're a victim. You have a lot of power with your diabetes.
You do. You do. And like it's all about choice, making the right choices at the right time.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
All right, mm-hmm. Thanks.
Thanks.
Well, I think that also makes the point, and it seems that in the way that we think about nutrition, we're starting to move a little bit more towards the idea of you've got to look at it as a whole,
mm-hmm.
not so much. I mean, obviously, people with diabetes have to be conscious throughout the day of what their blood sugar is.
Sure.
And it does. It can indeed change, you know, can. I mean, the idea is you want it to be sort of level and keep it at a controlled level. But it seems like at the same time, though, we're still thinking of – think about how everything you eat in one day, not so much what did I eat this morning, what am I going to eat at noon, what am I going to eat this afternoon, as if they were discrete things that didn't somehow hook up.
The key is balance, though.
Mm-hmm.
You need to make sure that, you know, it's in a whole day. Some people like the structure of a specific meal plan. That way they feel that they have more control if they have, you know, what they're supposed to eat at breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah.
Some people can look at it as a whole throughout the day. It just depends on the type of personality that you have and the type of person that you are, how you need to look at that.
Okay. Well, should we talk to somebody else?
Yes.
Let's go to Champagne in line one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
On the question of sugars, I think it was refined versus unrefined sugar. I'm not sure. At least I think it's a question worth bringing up because I think there is some misconception. It is possible to buy an unrefined sugar principally at health stores. The difference between an unrefined and a refined sugar is that the refined has been bleached. The unrefined has not been. Both are simple sugars.
That's correct. They are both simple sugars.
And there is no particular advantage to the unrefined.
No, a lot of people think that the brown sugar, or sugar in the raw, whatever you want to call it, is different than table sugar. It is in color, but as far as the effect on the blood sugar, it's the same.
I wasn't sure if that was what he meant or not, but I thought it was certainly worth bringing up.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call. That may indeed be what the caller was talking about. I guess I was sort of fixed on this idea of, again, sort of the difference between the piece of candy and the fruit and the apple.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking that there was in fact a difference there, and what the sugar was like, and what happened in your body. So we're talking. If we're talking about table sugar, it's all the same. It doesn't matter what color it is. It's pretty
there
much
there
all
may
the same.
May be slight differences, but for the most part, they're the same.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk with somebody in Chicago again. Line 4. Hello.
Thank you. I heard that a particular herb called Gymnema sylvestre, an Indian herb, was able to curb the sugar craving that people have. Have you ever heard anything about that?
I haven't heard about that. That would be something I would be interested in looking up. What did you say the name was?
It's spelled Gymnema. Then sylvestre. Uh-huh. Okay, well, the other question I had was regarding the idea that sugar lowers the immune system to some degree. Had you ever heard anything along those lines?
I haven't seen anything in research about that.
To the extent that sugar intake extends the digestive process so that a food that normally would have been digested in 4 or 5 hours or so winds up being sitting in your digestive tract for a couple more hours because of the ingestion of sugar. To that extent, I'd heard that, just works that way, too. But how do you feel about taking fruit? Fruit has a sweet sugar content. I'd heard that if you eat fruit or have fruit juices in the morning, to the extent that they're absorbed right into the bloodstream, more or less, rather than the digested in the digestive tract. In other words, eating fruit alone or having fruit juices alone are assimilated in moderation more easily. And what do you feel about that? Or is it too much sweetness there?
Well, some people who have what we call brittle diabetes, who are very sensitive to carbohydrate intake and insulin, some people cannot have fruit or fruit juice in the morning. The trend has been towards no fruit juice before 10 for individuals that have, some issues with especially gestational diabetes. A lot of physicians don't like to see people have fruit or fruit juice before 10.
Are there any particular vitamins or minerals that the person might utilize to help the insulin production and so forth?
They've been looking at the link between chromium and diabetes, though I haven't seen anything definite. They've been doing
vitamin
studies. What was that?
Vitamin D, I'd heard, was helpful.
I think I've seen some research on that recently, but nothing definitive.
Okay. Well, the only thing I could recommend is try to avoid those sugar cravings, and you'd be better off all the way around because it really say no to sugar,
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Right, thank you.
Well, just again, to be clear, let's go back to our apple and our Trinidad. Mm-hmm. If we added a glass of apple juice, and let us say that this was, that we did not add any sugar to it. We just got some apples and we,
pressed
them and we did not add anything to it. nothing like that, So it was just basically what would have been in the apple if you had just eaten it, but now we've pulled that out,
mm-hmm.
and we give it in a what would seem to me a little bit more concentrated sort of form. Is that going to be again, processed by the body differently than if you had eaten the apple?
Mm-hmm. It would be. I'm not a big advocate on juice, just because it tends to raise the blood sugar faster. You don't have the fiber from the apple. You don't have the soluble. You may have some insoluble, but you don't have the fiber content. And juice does tend to raise the blood sugar fast. That's something that historically they have used juice as a way to raise people's blood sugar. If you have someone that has a low blood sugar, they always tell you to go for juice. But we always recommend milk and some sort of carbohydrate with protein now so that it will sustain that blood sugar. But I would still go for the apple versus the juice as far as the way it's absorbed.
Okay.
Let me quickly say, if you take that apple and squeeze all the juice out of it, you only get about that much. And if I'm showing an inch in the bottle,
yeah,
and then
bed.
if you're drinking a four inch glass of apple juice, you're taking too much too fast.
It would be the equivalent of eating a bunch of apples.
Exactly, and more than you really need. This was the advice I got from my doctor. I said, oh boy, I can have fruit juices. Oh, he says, I wish you wouldn't have fruit juices. He says, eat the fruit. And then that's when I realized that if I eat one clementine, there's all of the fibers and everything in that. Plus, I feel like I've done something. It's tasty, and so I like those little clementines. But if I were to go and get the juice, I'd have to have 10 clementines squeezed to make that. Mm-hmm. And I saw that right away. Called them, don't do it. Stay away from that. And that's the way I respond to it. But and don't ever look at the sugars in apple juice in the store. You'll drop the bottle and run. It is so high. I was so disappointed because I've been looking at recipes that say, use apple juice as a supplement for this and you won't have to have that and that and that. And I thought, well, that's kind of interesting. So I started looking at it. It is so high, I don't even want to touch the bottle. Hmm. It makes me aggravated because I was hoping that, oh, boy, this is a nice thing that I can – nope, don't do it. And the other thing was also when I said, well, then can I have an apple? He said, yes, but I wish you'd take some fat with that when you're eating the apple. I said, you mean peanut butter on my apple?
That's one of my favorites.
And he said, yes. And that's the way I eat an apple now, is that I have peanut butter and the apple. Now, will you explain what is happening?
Why is that better than having the apple by itself?
Right.
Well, an apple by itself is okay, but you add that protein and it slows down again that blood sugar. Your body has something else it's working on, plus a little bit of fat. And the fat from, I usually get natural peanut butter because the oil and the fat from natural peanut butter is the monounsaturated type, which is good for us. You know, it's the same as the olive and canola.
And Smucker's is now making that as a product you can buy on the shelf. You don't have to go to a specialty store to get it.
That's the kind I have, is
Smucker's. Smucker's is bought somebody out and somebody, and now they're doing peanut butter fresh, untrampled.
Now it will taste different because it doesn't have it doesn't have sugar added to it. A lot of us are used to Jiffy.
To the top of your mouth too.
Now this is the kind of stuff where you open the jar and there's oil floating on top.
Yes, yep. And that's okay.
Yep.
You just stir that oil back in, and it's fine. A lot of people like to keep it turned upside down so the oil's at the other end, but it does get a little dry otherwise. Now, a lot of your commercial peanut butters have trans fats because they have added, in order to make it creamy and smooth, easier to spread, they have added partially hydrogenated soybean oil or something like that. And that's where the trans fats come from. So it's better to get the natural if you can tolerate it.
Okay.
Something else I do with peanut butter is I mix a half a cup of peanut butter with a quarter to a half a cup of applesauce, mix it together, and it makes a real good spread and it cuts the fat. So
you have to keep it. Good.
You have to keep it in the refrigerator though, but it's pretty good.
All right. Well, we have a couple of callers here, and maybe I should introduce again our guests. The last person you heard is Carol Shriver. She is a registered dietitian, licensed dietitian, and nutritionist. She's practiced as a registered dietitian since 1992. She works at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana and is particularly interested in things like weight management and cardiovascular disease and diabetes. And this is our monthly program on cooking, and it was the idea sort of came up in response to a caller last time around to do this as a topic. And Doyle said, well, yeah, I think that would be a good idea, and maybe we should have somebody who has some nutritional expertise, who's got a piece of paper on the wall that says that she does. And so that's why Carol is here. And also Doyle, the man we like to call our chef in residence. We have several callers here, so we'll get back to the phones. Kingman, Indiana is next in line. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm really enjoying the show. I had an experience, and I don't know if it's related to your topic or not. I'm curious about the connection between heartburn, protein, and diabetes. I was suffering from a lot of heartburn, acid reflux disease, had a prescription and all that kind of stuff, and not connected to that, started the Atkins diet and cut carbs out and went to high protein meals and such. And within a week or two, my heartburn was completely gone. And I have not had that kind of serious heartburn since I cut out eating a lot of carbs. And so I'm just wondering if there is a relationship between protein, high levels of protein, and or low levels of carbohydrates and acid reflux disease and massive heartburn.
I haven't seen anything about that. I would think it would be the opposite, because usually a higher fat diet creates, you know, the gastric reflux. Mm-hmm. But that would be something interesting to look into.
In my case, sugar will trigger heartburn. Oh, my gosh. It's terrible.
Really?
They make sometimes, there's a little fudge brownie that you can get in, like, fast food convenience stores and whatnot, and mm-hmm. it's way too much fat, and it's way too much sugar, and it's way too much chocolate, but it's delicious. And I used to eat those. And I noticed years ago, if I got one out of a vending machine, I had heartburn within 10 or 15 minutes.
Hmm. It could be related to the fat. Plus, you said it was a brownie.
Mm-hmm.
The chocolate would have caffeine, and that could cause some extra gastric juice and pressure. So that could be part of it also.
Well, it kind of blows my theory, but thank you.
Okay. Line four, Georgetown. Hello.
Good morning. I have a couple of questions. I had heard once that we're having such an increase of people with diabetes, and that they were doing some, and of course I know a lot of that is due to the obesity of our
correct
population, but mm-hmm. I heard that there was some studies they were doing some checking into, since so many people have gone on the cholesterol-lowering drugs, that they were doing some studies checking if there was any connection between the cholesterol-lowering drugs and causing people to become diabetic. Have you ever seen anything about that?
I have, in fact. I just got something the other day on that very topic. They are doing research on that. I don't think there's anything out that's definite yet.
That's conclusive, right?
Yeah,
okay.
They're still looking into it.
Okay. And the other thing, when you talked about the peanut butter, what kind of peanuts, if you want to make your own peanut butter, is there a particular type of peanuts that are better to use?
I don't think there's a certain kind that are better than another.
And is that like buying the natural peanut butter than if you just made your own?
Yes.
Yes.
And you can make it in a Cuisinart. Mm-hmm. I would use skinned. Don't use the peanuts with skins.
Correct. And do you need to add anything to that?
No.
Just chop them up in the.
You wouldn't want to add a little oil to that?
No. No, there's plenty of oil in it, and you grind them up, and they it doesn't become emulsified, but you know it makes its own juice. In the Cuisinart, it makes beautiful peanut butter.
Okay, and then you were talking about the juices being so high in sugar, which I have found true also. But I have been using more vegetable juice, like V8 and mm-hmm. tomato, and mm-hmm. that's a lot lower in the And the carbohydrates and the sugars, of course.
That's right. And it also counts for a vegetable.
Okay.
It's under the vegetable category, your
right.
V8. Now, if you have issues with blood pressure, you may want to get the low sodium versus the regular.
Okay.
And they do make a low sodium. They also make a calcium fortified.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Sure.
Thanks for the call. So if you were going to get peanuts and grind them up yourself, process them, and make your
own probably get the big ones instead of the little Spanish ones because they're already peeled.
And what kind of shelf life does that have?
Not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'll get rancid. So you keep it in the refrigerator, and then it gets hard, and then you get mad. But you see, those of us who are in our seventh decade remember that that's the only peanut butter we had when we were little. There wasn't all this stuff. By this stuff, I mean Jiffy and Zip and all these new things. And so we grew up with it. In fact, it came in a Chinese. You'd buy it in bulk in the store, and it came in those Chinese cartons.
Oh, like you get carry out Chinese?
Yes.
In
those little cartons with the wire on the top. And that's the way you got peanut butter, and we kept it in that. But we got small amounts and we'd use it up. It was just brother and me and mother and daddy. Mm-hmm. And we'd use it up, and that would be it. But, oh, like I say, well, and then sometimes for a snack – since that I'm back in my childhood. Since that peanut butter is very tight and compact and maybe it was drier, you get a spoonful of it and sort of pack it in the spoon and then sit and suck on that spoon for about a half an hour.
Sounds like a good snack.
Well,
okay. Well, sure, why not?
And no carbs from the bread.
Yeah.
Nope.
Well, I'm thinking more about this now because I do occasionally like to have the PBJ.
Mm-hmm.
But then now I'm thinking, though, about what you were saying before about the trans fats in the store, all these other kind of peanut butters that they put that in to make it nice and smooth.
Yes.
So it would be
That's
easy
why
to
mothers
spread.
Like
but,
it.
You know, that they put this stuff in there. It's probably not real from the heart health point of view is not.
No,
not good.
No, and we're hearing more about trans fats. I'm not sure if you've all heard about those. For a while, we thought that margarines were better because the butter has the cholesterol. Mm-hmm. It's an animal product; it has the cholesterol, and we know that cholesterol is not the greatest for us. But then we got into the margarines that have the trans fats. Now, a lot of different products have partially hydrogenated soybean oil, and that's what you can find on the ingredient list that will lead you to the trans fat.
So even a vegetable oil, what you have to do to it to make it solid is problematic.
Mm-hmm. However, Crisco has come out with a no trans fat Crisco. So, and there are several margarines out on the market that are trans fat free. Brumlin Brown has a trans fat free. Country Crock has a trans fat free. I can't believe it's not butter.
Smart Balance. And then there's another one. There's a new one. It's a single word. Starts with a B, I think.
Benecol?
Yes.
Benecol also has the plant sterols and stanols, which are supposed to be better for the heart, also.
Okay.
They have a protective. Property.
Okay, so you want to be reading your labels.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to get one more caller here. Urbana, hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, about peanut butter. The absolutely best peanut butter is 100% Valencia peanut butter from Strawberry Fields. It's called Arrowhead Mills. And it's
Arrowhead.
Everything you say, you know, with oil on top and it gets hard, but it's the best. And it's just peanuts, no salt or – wait a second. No added salt, sugar, or preservatives. It's just peanuts.
That sounds like a good one.
Okay. Yeah,
so. Arrowhead Mills, that's a good company.
Yeah, it's the greatest. I love it. Okay, that's
all right.
Thank
well,
you.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
The suggestion. If people want to try that, they can do that. We're almost out of time. We really actually haven't talked about cooking very much.
Well,
on this show.
I don't think this is as much a cooking issue as a sorting out issue.
Uh-huh.
Because you sort out and then you'll find some way of cooking it.
Okay. Well, any last, would you like to give a quick recipe?
No. Not really. Other than as I say, you make a decision not to do this, and you do other ways. I am almost entirely, well, I am entirely committed to no-fat milk. And being a farm boy, having all that cream on top of the milk and knowing what that was like to have it in the freezer, and you could have that all the time, it took a long time, and they called it blue milk.
Mm-hmm.
And because actually it's a little, skim milk is bluer than other milk. And I could hardly stand to drink it. Now I cannot stand to drink even 1%.
Neither can I. I used to drink milk straight from the cow, and I'd need a spoon now.
Yes. So the thing is, as we've been talking, is find out what these things are that you want to avoid, and find just avoid, not eliminate. And then make ways of using them in very special ways. I find the hardest thing to do is to give up cheese, because I like cheese. We're in a cheese culture. We have the best cheeses in the world, and they're all right here. And the only advice that I've been taking on that is to use the hard cheeses and grate, because when you grate them, you get smaller amounts, and then they are sharper in their taste, and they give you the satisfaction of, oh boy, you know. So two teaspoons of scraped Parmesan. Of course, I like to eat Parmesan chunks. Well, I do, I do with honey on it walnuts.
We're going to have to stop
once a year, not more than twice.
Next time, Doyle will be back. Thank you very
yes.
much. And also thanks to our special guest, Carol Shriver. She's a nutritionist,
now,
registered dietitian at Carl Foundation Hospital.
How do people get a hold of you, Carol?
I actually work in the Health Services Research Center, and I am with the Medicare Coordinated Care Demonstration. You can get a hold of me at by email or by phone. 217-586-5419.
Great.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.